You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News, and today I am talking on Tuesday the 27th. You're listening later than that, but either way, day one of Pacers practice. The season is here. The media stuff is done. It's basketball time. Players on the court, lineups being made, impressions being had, camp battles happening, and of course your usual injury updates, because this is the Indiana Pacers after all. We'll cover day one of practice today, what we learned from the people we talked to, Rick Carlisle, Isaiah Jackson, Miles Turner, and Benedict Mathurin. Plus, holy cow, the last time I talked about the roster was last Thursday, the 22nd. Since then, the Pacers have waived five players and signed another. Wow, am I behind on the roster and Malcolm Brogdon and DeAndre Ayton stuff? This is a busy show somehow for the first day of Pacers practice. Let's start with practice notes, though. I like talking about actual basketball and the things happening on the court. Practice number one for the Pacers today. I'll cover the highlight notes because some of the stuff I was looking for is from guys is how much different this felt from last year, right? They can talk about it and stuff, but when you actually do it and you come into a practice and it's different than last year when they're trying to win. They're trying to have a new coach and Rick Carlisle bring this group together. They were one play-in win away from the eighth seed. That's not acceptable. They want to be better. They want to be better. This year, that's not the case. How does that change things? And I think it sounds like a lot of it is less, you know, they'll talk about scheme. They'll talk about things like that, sets and all that. But it sounds like it's a lot of details, you know. Within your base defense, how do you close out? What is your footwork like? What angles are you standing at? You know, things like that. And that is, I think, important for a younger team. Basics first, scheme second. And I think that's a good way to operate, but it's a little different than last year with a more similar team, a different coach trying to overturn that team. So big note here, first one. Talked about this a little yesterday from the media day. About a 2-to-1 ratio of defense time to offense time for this Pacers team. They were last in defense from the trade deadline to the end of the season last year. That's not going to fly again this year, even with a lot of the same guys. I think they would like to improve on that end just naturally. And some of that is working on what their base defense will be, how that will look. Some of that's going to be, you know, I think Isaiah Jackson talked about this. They worked on a lot of like footwork and closeouts and not flying by guys, things like that. Something the Pacers were pretty bad at times last year, just flying by guys on the defensive end. I think that 2-to-1 ratio of defense to offense will last for a while. And I still think, even with that level of focus, when games come and other teams are throwing new things at them and they're all playing together and actually communicating in a loud arena for the first time, they will still probably look bad to open the season. But you have to start doing it as soon as possible so that it can grow throughout the season. Remember, Rick Carlisle said a lot of the growth this year will be eye test stuff, month-to-month growth, things like that. Their defense early on might still struggle, but working on it hard early, working on things like footwork, like closeouts on day one, is super important. Thing number two I thought was important from practice today. Hey, something that I care about that was new last year, not as new this year, but still new for, gosh, seven guys who are new to the team in camp this year, are the bell. For those of you who are unaware of the bell, Pacers hung it up last year on the wall. It's this loud, super loud bell. If you listen to my audio from practice, you can hear it dinging in the background. So the Pacers do this drill in the portion of practice that we can see where guys shoot five threes from the around-the-world spots, whatever you want to call it, both wings, top of the key, and both corners. If they make 20 or more, they get to ring the bell. It's a big deal. Last year was a huge deal because it was new. There's more bell ringers than we can see. The first guy I saw ring the bell was Benedict Mathurin, which would be, I mean, if that's something that can carry into the season, him hitting threes would be massive, obviously, for his compliment fit to Tyrese Haliburton. Obviously, just practice threes. Dudes make a million. Like Keegan Murray of the Kings said today that he hit 117 out of 150 in his drills. You know, guys are just money in the open gym. But Mathurin I saw ring the bell. O'Shea Brissett I saw ring the bell. And Aaron Nesmith I saw ring the bell in the open portions. Four baskets split. I can't remember exactly who was with who this time, but new coaching player assignments, which I thought was pretty interesting as well as the Pacers shift into a new era. But a lot of questions about the defensive focus for a lot of these players. For example, Miles Turner, who, holy cow, I don't have to dedicate a whole segment to Miles Turner on this podcast for the first time in like 9 days. Miles Turner has to step up more as like a leader on defense, he talked about. You know, whether that's more communicating, helping guys know where they need to be, things like that, that's a big deal. Isaiah Jackson added some weight. He's got to learn how to use it to his advantage on defense, whether that's going straight up, you know, how to still block a shot and go straight up, but using your weight to make it a clean block, things like that. That's what he was talking about. Mathurin as well, talking about communicating, and that was a hurdle for Buddy Hield. He said last year, a lot of teams run the same stuff. They just use different words to describe it. So getting on the same page with the terminology and just general communication, pretty important. Mather in general, good first practice, he said. And it was funny hearing Isaiah Jackson talk about how, you know, it's such like a shock value thing, your first practice in the NBA. Not that it's like hard or something you've never done before or new or like crazy surprising. It's just, it's your first practice in the NBA. You don't know what to expect. And having a lot of like a younger team, I think, could be better for guys like Mathurin and Andrew Nembhard, who they call Drew, by the way. If I refer to him as Drew, that's why. And Kendall Brown, who have all these younger guys that they can talk to about that sort of stuff, you know, on their first days of practice. And, you know, Benedict, or Isaiah is saying he was talking to Benedict about what to expect and things like that, and he was ready to go. And Mathurin said it was a good first practice. All the sorts of good rookie stuff. And speaking of Benedict Mathurin and Isaiah Jackson, perhaps the only hint of a lineup we heard today was from Isaiah Jackson and Rick Carlisle talking about, first Isaiah Jackson mentioned it. He said that the five-man unit he was with on defense for a lot of practices they ran fives was himself, Terry Taylor, Aaron Nesmith, Benedict Mathurin, and TJ McConnell, which I thought was interesting. He said that group got a lot of stops, won a lot of drills. Rick Carlisle called that five-man group dominant. That's great. Like, I think that there's some defensive potential in that group. In fact, four of those five guys project to be at least average defenders at some point, maybe even as soon as next season. The standout part to me is I'm not going to read into lineups too much on one day of practice, right? It's important to keep perspective. Things are very fluid. It's a new team. Rick Carlisle's talked about his huge rotation. That sounds like a second unit to me, though. I mean, TJ McConnell seems like the backup one, and Isaiah Jackson seems like the backup five. The other three guys, you know, Mathurin could have started or come off the bench, Nesmith, who knew what his role would be, and Terry Taylor in that group instead of O'Shea. You know, maybe it's not a second unit, but maybe it is. And if it is, interesting stuff. We'll see what where O'Shea Brissett slots in and they ultimately play a preseason game a week from now. But that would be a fascinating second unit to me. It's a good way to get Mathurin maybe some more on-ball touches, but not explore his fit with Haliburton as much. I think I would opt for the latter more than the former, but not my decision. Either way, that sounds like a unit we saw. We'll see what the rotation looks like in games, or if we can ask Rick who his, you know, five starting five, air quotes, because it's practice, has been so far. But that would be interesting. It would be a good way to explore Nesmith shooting because, man, would it be needed in that five to space out in any way. Did see him ring the bell, though. I'm looking forward to talking to him hopefully tomorrow about this team. So that's the general practice notes. We got a lot about defense, a lot about new guys fitting in and the change of the vibe, I guess. Now it's more youth infused and focusing on detail kind of stuff, and a good successful practice for the rookies. The other thing, got to do the injury thing. What we could see, Servetus, who had this ankle injury, was practicing. Gogo was practicing, and Jalen Smith was practicing. Those were the three guys dealing with little ankle tweaks here and there that were kind of up in the air, TBD. Always good to have as many bodies as you can. Seems like the Pacers did in day one, which is great. And those guys are fighting for something, whether that's playing time or a spot on the team. Everybody playing is always good for your chances of scrimmaging, things like that. There was one guy missing, the mystery man of the Pacers, Daniel Theis. I still haven't seen him in person. He is sick. You know, he had to do some, you know, the Rick was explaining that he had to do testing yesterday for his sickness. It's not COVID, and it was tested again today. It's not COVID, but if he gets another non-COVID test, he could come back to practice, but they weren't sure what the symptoms, so we didn't see him on media day or today. So Daniel Theis still hasn't practiced. I'm really looking forward to just speaking with him. I have no idea what he's like, what he's expecting of this team, what he thought of the trade, anything. So looking forward to chatting with him and seeing what the deal is, and I think we'll get that chance Wednesday if he does turn another negative COVID test, but we'll see. We'll see early in the season. So that is practice number one. Notes, nothing too shocking, no injuries, nothing life-changing, but know, those are the focuses that you want to hear from a young team early. You know, young guys getting their first practice under their belt and focusing on defense and getting better on that end of the floor. Because like Tyrese Haliburton said yesterday, yeah, this team might want to be a good transition team that outruns everybody. But to do that, you got to get stops. You got to rebound. So that defensive focus will be very important. So the last time I talked about this roster, the changes and tweaks of the back end of this roster was a podcast on September 22nd. That was a Thursday last week, talking about Langston Galloway sliding in on this roster. And hey, they've made like a billion moves since then. So let's talk about what happened, what the Pacers roster is now, and why it's not quite 20 guys. Really quickly, though, just want to talk to you guys about BetOnline.net, your number one source for football betting info this season. You can find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth articles and analysis on every game you can find at BetOnline. And as always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all your sport wagering information. Live betting, up-to-the-minute scores for every sport out there, all at BetOnline.net. Lines coming for this weekend. Colts favored by 3 points over the Tennessee Titans, coming off of their very shocking win over the Chiefs. My Hoosiers projected to lose. I need a better word for that. By 5 in Nebraska, you can get those lines over at betonline.net. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite games and events. MLB, MMA, boxing, golf, and soon to be in just a few days, NBA. Head over to betonline.net or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in the action, because BetOnline is where the game starts. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, my goodness, so much is going on around the NBA. The Hawks and Thunder made a trade. Suns are doing something not looking good with their owner and DeAndre Ayton's comments. And the Celtics still kind of hazy with what's going on with their coach. Check out any of those Locked On shows to get the latest on those teams. Let's talk about the Pacers, though, because this is Locked On Pacers and all the many things that we haven't even had a chance to talk about. Last time I talked to you guys, the Pacers had 20 players on their roster, and three of them were Gabe York, Benny Boatwright, and David Stockton. And they were headed to camp. They were only 4 days away, and then they waived three of those guys. Those three guys I just said, actually, Benny Boatwright, Gabe York, and David Stockton, down to the G League. Manets own all of their rights. $50K bonus for York and Stockton, $10K for Benny Boatwright. Great, extra money. You get to play in the G League. Woohoo, that's good. Those guys will be good for the Mad Ants. But that was done so the Pacers could sign three different guys, right? So their roster has changed. And one of the things we talked about last week on that show, the last time I talked about the roster, is they're going to sign Langston Galloway, right? He was at the golf outing. Very obvious. He will eventually be legally signed. At that time, he was not yet. But he would be signed. And as Scott Agnes of Fieldhouse Files reported, competing for one of the last roster spots with James Johnson, who they had already signed by that time. So in the corresponding move to those three waivers that I just mentioned, Boatwright, York, and Stockton, they did bring in Langston Galloway. That was one of the three official moves they made. We saw him at Media Day. He's number 11. I'll be interested to chat with him, even if he doesn't end up making the team, because he played with Jalen Smith in Phoenix. I think that will provide a unique perspective on Smith's growth, especially now that he's projecting to be a starter here. And I'm looking forward to talking to everybody on the team, honestly, but that's something particular besides his game, how he can fit with this team, that I want to chat with Langston Galloway about. So he was signed, as were two other guys. I mean, this web just keeps expanding. So one of the two guys signed last Friday was Justin Anderson. If you followed the team last year at all, or you keep up with the G League, or you've just been an NBA fan for a long time, you probably heard of him, right? Last year, he was first team all G League, averaged like 28 points per game for the Mad Ants, was totally kicking butt. And like, the Pacers were super banged up in early March. And I remember talking to a few people that I would just see around at games like, when's Justin Collip coming? It wasn't like an if, it was a when, because they had this open roster spot. It was far enough into the season, their tax concerns were gone. And it's something the Pacers usually do, is promote their one of the best Mad Ants. It seemed obvious, and it did happen. Played in 13 games, started six times, was like an okay player, right? Close to an NBA level talent right now. Clearly has some affinity for the Mad Ants because he signed with the Pacers and got waived. So he will be in Fort Wayne, presumably got a bonus for his time. Sticking with the Pacers, he'll get that bonus to play in Fort Wayne if he kicks butt again. Maybe they'll call him up if their roster is changed, right? James Johnson and Langston Galloway on non-guaranteed deals. So maybe they get cut mid-season or something. Maybe the Pacers make a trade. Not like their starting center has been in a million trade rumors. You know, there are a lot of ways their roster could look different come February, March, whatever, that someone like Justin Anderson, if he continues to be good in the G League, could be promoted. So he was signed on Friday, and then he was waived on Sunday. So that roster spot was filled to keep it at 20 and then waived back to 19. The other guy the Pacers signed on Sunday, someone they traded for earlier this offseason, I warned you on the show, keep an eye on him for signings because the Mad Ants traded for him, Norvell Pell. You might not know much about him because he's had a very strange path. Didn't play in college, took him until he was 27, I think, to get his NBA debut, but he was signed on Friday with Justin Anderson. That one also comes after, it came 9 days after the Mad Ants traded Nate Hinton to Cleveland Charge to get Norvell Pell's rights, right? Trading away Nate Hinton's a big deal. He was on the Pacers roster last year, right? He's a high-quality G League guy. So they get Pell, they sign him to a deal, and then 2 days later, they also waive him. Pell, a good center, right? Really good rebounder and shot blocker. Has played for a bajillion teams in the last 3 years. But anyway, both of those guys came in. I don't even know if they touched the facility. And then they were waived. They get a bonus, presumably, if they report to the Mad Ants and didn't show up with the Pacers. So I thought that those two waivers would be met with two signings, two Exhibit 10 signings or something that the Pacers could have. More camp competition, more guys on the roster. They were not. So the signings and waivers in order were Stockton, Boatwright, York signed, and then cut on Friday, and then when they were cut, Galloway, Anderson, Pell signed, and then Anderson and Pell were cut on Sunday. That's the full timeline since I last talked to you about the Pacers roster. So now it's at 18. If you'll notice, that is less than the maximum that the team can have in the offseason of 20, which I think is interesting, right? I feel like the best course of action is to maximize your roster spots in the offseason. You can easily cut those guys if some crazy awesome deal comes up for flexibility reasons. It's more guys to have in the building for asset purposes, just in case they look awesome or something like that. You know, there's little reason not to. But the Pacers are opting not to, and I'd be curious to ask Rick Carlisle face-to-face, which I didn't today at practice because there were a lot of other things to ask him about, but why they're opting to carry 18 instead. So that does reduce a little bit the camp competition level of stuff. I would still, based on the reporting we got before Summer League, expect that, you know, the Tevin Brown, Eli Brooks, Jermaine Samuels, Fan Bojang group, I would still expect some of them to get signed at some point before the season starts just to get their rights on the Mad Ants. You know, I don't think they would be like, hey, come play Summer League for us and then, you know, not have that follow through all the way. So I will be curious to see what's going to go on with them and where they end up and when that happens, because as of right now, that's not really clear, but I do anticipate, you know, those guys still being in the mix, but right now they're not, and I'm interested to know what the Pacers are thinking going with 18 instead of 20. But that is their roster situation right now as camp goes. 18 guys. If you're missing a couple on the 18, remember they signed James Johnson and Langston Galloway and David Da Servidis to the back of their roster spots behind the 14 obvious ones plus Kendall Brown on the two-way. So as it looks like it's projecting right now, I mean, the way it looks is it's going to be James Johnson and Langston Galloway competing for the final roster spot. And because of the salary floor, I feel like they'll keep someone in that spot, you know, just have a salary there. It's easy to dump them if, again, something comes your way and you need to make a waiver to make a trade. No big deal. So I expect they'll keep somebody in that spot. And then there's Servetus still, who maybe he doesn't have the chance to get that roster spot over those two vets because they'd like to have the vet. But he's the only guy who can be converted to a two-way who's currently around. So maybe the Pacers view one of the guys I mentioned earlier, their prior Exhibit 10s, is a good fit on a two-way, which is possible. They could sign them later this summer. But it seems like Servetus has the advantage right now. He was signed well before the rest of the Exhibit 10s, so he was around at practices for earlier in September. He went to Halliburton's camp. He was at Media Day, right? It seems like he's got a slight advantage right now, just given that he has a head start. But maybe the Pacers are thinking differently with that spot, and we'll see what happens with Servetus. But it seems like right now, given the information and the guy's sign that we have, one of the vets will get the last roster spot. Servetus will take spot 20. That's not all. I want to talk about something that happened in the league today that I think is relevant for you to know as a Pacers fan, and other stuff at Media Day, DeAndre Ayton and Malcolm Brogdon, that I also think is relevant to the Pacers ecosystem. Let's talk about those things really quickly, though. Before that, I want to talk to you guys about Acre Pro. When it comes to land sales, it pays to have experts in your corner. And Acre Pro, Midwest Farm Group, are your local farmland specialists with decades of experience in Indiana agriculture. No one knows the market better. Whether you're doing a 1031 exchange, expanding your operation, or selling a row crop farm, your local Acre Pro agent will walk the land with you and ensure the deal's done right. Great service? Just the beginning. Acre Pro provides unparalleled land data, including soil ratings, elevation, flood zones, land valuation across parcels so you can get the full picture up front and be confident in the entire land market. Your agent will cater to each of your individual needs and help you navigate the complexities of buying and selling land so that the process is made simple. Experience the ease of AcrePro by working with farmland specialists like Kyle Rule, Brady Hammond, Neil Hurt, and Kyle Spray. Visit acrepro.com or call 765-587-3185 and talk to your local land expert today. Again, acrepro.com or call 765-587-3185. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. Stuff's going on around the league, so any team you're interested in could be a great choice for your second listen today. I mentioned all the crazy ones at the top of our second segment here, just to pick one out individually, because we're going to talk about this team in a second. Go listen to Locked On Suns. Hear what DeAndre Ayton had to say, or really not say, about his situation in Phoenix after what happened this summer with the Pacers. I think you'll find all of that very interesting. So, a couple more little things I want to cover quickly today that might seem a little minor, but to me are very interesting in the grand scheme of what's going on. And I can't remember where I saw one of these takes, so I'll say it when I get to it. But anyway, first up is that Ayton stuff. Holy moly. Ayton was asked straight up yesterday on Suns Media Day about how he's feeling about being in Phoenix. And he said about four words in total. You know, someone asked me if he's happy being in Phoenix. He said, "I'm good." That is not exactly the ringing endorsement you want if you're the Suns. And some of that has to do with the Pacers' pursuit of him, right? He thought he was going somewhere else. And then today it's revealed, hey, he has still not spoken with Suns head coach Monty Williams since that Game 7 playoff series. That is wild stuff from Ayton and the Suns. We'll see if that gap ever gets bridged there. But it seemed like Ayton did have interest in leaving Phoenix, which was a part of why he signed with the Pacers this summer. And now we're here. I mean, he was asked how he felt about his contract being matched by the Suns. "I was happy." That's all the words he gave, right? So that's you know, pretty interesting. The videos are more damning than the quote itself. But yeah, DeAndre Ayton not pumped to be back with the Suns, it sounds like, and hasn't spoken with the team's head coach since Game 7 last year. Asked if he's happy in Phoenix, Ayton said, "Yeah, I'm all right." And that sounds, again, okay. You got to watch the video. Gerald Bourget, who's been on the show a few times covering the Suns for PHNX Suns, has it all there, and it's something. So Pacers may have done a number on the Suns, but reminder, they cannot trade for Ayton this season. That is not legal after they matched that contract. Thing number two I thought was noteworthy, Pacers adjacent from around the league. Malcolm Brogdon saying at Celtics Media Day that apparently he was given the choice between a couple trade packages of what team he wants to go to. From Tim Bontemps of ESPN, he tweeted this as follows. Malcolm Brogdon says the Pacers gave him the option to pick among a few different teams in a trade away from Indiana, and then he picked Boston, quote, "because I want to win," unquote. Said he's excited to play for the Celtics and contribute to whatever role is asked of him. Now, this is the part I was talking about where I'm stealing this phrasing from somewhere else. I cannot remember who it's from. It might have been Indy Cornrows, because I listened to Mark and Caitlin earlier today. Anyway, interesting, first of all, that he would say that. You got to imagine, look, the Pacers are doing what's best for their franchise, that they had what they would consider approximately equal offers for Malcolm coming from a few different teams. So they said, okay, you know, we like all these similarly, or we feel good about these values, Malcolm. What makes sense to you? Or maybe one was just like slightly better, but not worth not working with Malcolm. And as the Pacers do with trades. But, you know, thinking back to like, we haven't heard this from Domantas Sabonis, and maybe it's worth asking him when he finally returns to Indiana, because I don't think he's talked too much about the trade since it happened. But, you know, he has not said something similar about having any sort of choice. I think it's Indy Cornrows. Anyway, you know, what I saw that I thought was a good point was, like, I think if the Pacers know they're getting slam dunk value, like a guy like Tyrese Haliburton, for example, they'll still make the trade. But I think in this instance, what makes sense is, because again, the Pacers front office isn't dumb, as a lot of people like to think. Have they made mistakes? Sure, but they're not stupid people. I think that they had a couple offers that they felt were similar in value, and they went to Malcolm and they said, okay, you know, here are the teams that make sense for us, or what we're trying to do, or fit our, you know, maybe they already had Ayton zeroed in and they knew, okay, the Boston one lets us clear the space very easily, or something like that. A lot of moving parts in the summer, but they said, these are the destinations that make sense for us as trades. Where do you want to go? So I thought that was pretty interesting for Malcolm. I'll be curious to ask him more about that when Boston's in town later this season. I found that very interesting. You know, you don't hear that very often. And sometimes people talk about you know, players' perception of a franchise. And I do think that matters to some extent, but I mostly think it matters if it's like the best possible perception or the worst possible perception. You know, for a while, players did not want to play for the Kings and Knicks, you know, just how it is. And sometimes that perception changes. I think it is. But, you know, it can go the other way too, where it's like, oh, wow, playing for, you know, whatever, Miami is awesome or whoever. So having good player-friendly perception is good, and growing that up as high as you can is great, but it, you know, you shouldn't do it to the detriment of your team. So that's why my theory here is, and I would love to get more perspective, because this comes out 2 days after we talked to Kevin Pritchard, that, you know, he had this choice amongst destinations, and he ultimately chose Boston. Another thing, Pacers adjacent around the league. Holy cow, flying through NBA news that I find relevant to the Pacers. The Hawks and Thunder made a trade. You might be wondering how that's relevant to the Pacers. Vic Krejci went from OKC to Atlanta. Mo Harkless goes from Atlanta to OKC, along with second-round pick. Sounds like nothing. I agree, that's a very minor trade. But what did that trade do? Got the Hawks under the luxury tax line. The Thunder get another pick, and they still have players. They have a lot of guaranteed contracts, 18 to be exact. So I only bring up that trade to say teams are still looking at ways to either get their finances in order, get their guaranteed contracts figured out, or swap assets in a way that makes sense for them. It's not done just because practices have started. Mo Harkless is probably a Hawks media day, right? Like, that sort of stuff happens. The Thunder got approved for a Chet Holmgren disabled player exception yesterday. Boom, they make a trade and use it immediately. So all this to say, the Pacers, as a team who has, you know, roster spots right now, who has money to blow and could take guys into space, they could be a team that helps a team facilitate something that gets them under the tax or gets their guaranteed contract total down. So just looking through the league, for example, Detroit has 16 guaranteed contracts, and theirs is easy. Kemba Walker is their guy who's out of place. You know, I don't think he was at media day. I don't think he'll be reporting to Detroit anytime. James Edwards of The Athletic has done some great reporting on where the Pistons and Kemba may be headed. Yeah, I mean, they could agree to a buyout, but why would Kemba do that if he doesn't have another destination figured out? And so maybe the Pistons just trade away Kemba's little tiny salary and a second-round pick to another team, and then they get a trade exception. Maybe that has value to them. So for the Pacers, he's a guy, for example, that, you know, you get closer to the salary floor by taking him in. Rudy Gay with the Jazz. The Jazz and their million trades this summer have too many contracts, right? It happens that way. The Jazz probably have to trade two players. Rudy Gay seems the most obvious. He was a not good signing for them last year. You know, he's another one. I mean, the Jazz are expensive, but not, you know, it's not, finances aren't as big of a deal for them. They're not for the Pistons either, but either way, you know, getting a trade exception has some value. The Rockets have a bunch of guys that they got from the Mavs in the Christian Wood trade, like Marquise Chriss, Trey Burke, Sterling Brown, who maybe they would like to move. The Grizzlies have one guy too many. The Sixers have a couple guys too many, and they have some non-guaranteed guys, but they're talented. You know, they're Ty Jerome in OKC, now Mo Harkless in OKC as well. You know, all this to say, I think there's a lot of other teams that are still sorting out the pieces perfectly, and in 2 weeks from now, when the season's about to start and the deadline to get your roster down to the right size comes, they're going to have to do something. And so maybe these teams aren't worried about the tax, say, whatever, you know, whatever, we'll just waive the guy. If the right situation doesn't come for us, we'll just cut the guy. But if you're the Pacers and you need to reach the salary floor, you can be opportunistic and get an asset to take these guys in. Even if it's something minor, it's better than nothing, right? So the consideration is taking this guy into our cap space preventing us from doing a better trade in the future? And that's the sort of yin and yang, whatever. The pros and cons the Pacers have to think about in these sorts of deals. You know, for this one, Atlanta, by trading away Harkless, I forget what he's at, like $4 million-ish. For a non-guaranteed minimum guy, they get under the tax, they get some flexibility. You know, that's a winner for them. The Thunder get a pick, that's a winner. You know, the Pacers can be in a situation to help a team in that sort of situation. There's a couple teams over the tax still by a small amount that it might make sense to pursue something like that. So don't think that just because practice has started and the Pacers have, you know, sent out a press release saying they finalized their training camp roster, that they've actually finalized anything. Just because for a team that has really prioritized optionality and building this team the way they have, having flexibility and having these options to get an asset to make another team's life easier. Getting assets is all, you know, what Kevin Pritchard talked about last week. He wants more picks. I think that makes a lot of sense. So we'll see if anything actually comes of that, but that trade sort of jogged my memory that I was thinking about ways the Pacers could you know, get closer to the floor or grab some assets still with their space before the season starts. And those are just a couple that crossed over Tony East Brainland this week. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed me nerding out at the end of this show. We'll continue with practice notes this week as they become relevant. But I think what we're going to do, I mean, I was supposed to do all these last week, but I still have two more episodes of season previews to do. Tyrese Haliburton and the reserve forwards. I think I'll do one tomorrow. I think I'll do a mailbag Friday, mostly because I'll be traveling and I need to have an evergreen topic that won't become totally irrelevant if I'm out of town. And then we'll do Haliburton Monday to kick off October. And then we'll be right back to what's going on in practice. What's the team doing? Preseason's coming up. All the big news around the Pacers. We're running out of time to do season previews, so I got to get those done. Thank you guys a ton for listening today. You can follow me on Twitter at TEastNBA and the show at Locked on Pacers, where the tweet will be coming that you can reply to with your mailbag questions. Thanks for listening. Locked On Podcast Network has teams covering every team. If you're interested in any of the rest, as practices start, your team every day. That's what we like to say here at the Podcast Network. Everybody have a great rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow.